I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count for your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by Code Writing Carpenter Ants. Instead, it's supported by the generous contributions of people like you, our listeners, on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/thinkingsideways to learn more.
Thinking Sideways.
I don't understand.
Does not compute.
You never know.
Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
Well, hey there, and welcome again to another episode of Thinking Sideways. I am Steve, of course, joined by...
Devin.
And Joe.
And Joe. And okay. This week we have yet another mystery. This week we are going to talk about the death of Abismo Negro.
Oh.
Abismo Negro, for anybody who doesn't know, was a luchador, and his luchadors, that's obviously Abismo Negro, was his ring name. Mm-hmm. His real name was actually Andreas Alejandro Palomeque Gonzalez.
Do we want to tell people what a luchador is?
We will. That's probably a good idea.
We're
going to get there.
I'm sorry.
Just a brief description of what the mystery is before we talk about the details on it. Palomeque was found dead under a bridge near El Rosario, Mexico, in March of 2009. And the initial belief of what caused his death and then the eventual official cause of death was accidental drowning, which caused a lot of questions to be raised. And the reason partially is because it was during the dry season in Mexico.
And he drowned in a mud puddle.
And he drowned.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he basically drowned in a mud puddle.
But it
so...
was filled with deadly dihydrogen monoxide.
That stuff will get you.
Oh, yeah. A single teaspoon of that can kill you.
Can kill you. Yeah. And everybody who's consumed it dies.
Mm-hmm. You done?
Nope.
Okay. So this supposed mud puddle was actually a body of water. It was about waist deep. But it is really strange because it raises the question of how does a man who is so physically fit drown in such a small body of water?
When he could just stand up.
When he could just stand up. Yeah. And so the questions around the mystery are, you know, how did he die? Was it really an accident? If so, how did it happen? And if it wasn't an accident, then it must have been murdered. And who pulled off this very well covered up murder?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really what our story is.
Good questions, all.
It's quite insidious, I must agree.
Before we get into the mystery, quick shout out to Steven, who suggested this.
Not like, Steve.
Not me. Yeah. No, somebody else. Like a year ago, which I've been, this is another one I've been sitting on forever. I admit it, I'm doing this all the time.
You are. You know, I go through that spreadsheet that we keep of all of the suggestions, and I see, oh, that one sounds, oh, Steve called dibs already. That one's up. Steve called dibs already. Okay, I'll do this one. No, Joe's got dibs already.
Yeah, sorry.
You guys have been doing this for years.
I know, I really apologize. We should have warned you, except that you would have got in on the really good stories. Is to tell you that we were calling dibs on the spreadsheet.
I know.
So,
I didn't know until
By the way, Devin, we're calling dibs on the spreadsheet, so go ahead and call dibs on anything you want.
Oh, great. Now.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Now that we've got, you know, actually, the reason I do that is that every time it's time to do an episode I'm trying to think of a good mystery to do, I go out there and I go through those things, and sometimes I'll be opening those up and realizing, Christ, you know, I looked at this thing like 3 times already and then forgotten about it and gone back and looked. So I decided to start marking the good ones.
Uh-huh.
And you'll notice I've marked other ones as too short or not a mystery. Or
I have noticed that.
Joe has his own crib note system.
He does.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I still don't know what the asterisk means. I've asked him 3 times. He refuses to tell me.
Actually, I've forgotten what it means. I think it means I looked at it or something.
So, new mystery next week. What does the asterisk mean?
Dibs!
Yeah, okay.
All right, let's go on with our story, shall we?
Okay. Oh, yeah, let's do that.
I do have... Okay, before we actually get into the story, quick disclaimer here. The story took place in Mexico. There's a lot of Spanish. Spanish is not a language that I'm very good with. I mean, if you've heard me speak British English, you know how bad I am.
Or English, English. English, English? Yep, I
American
said it.
English.
America.
So, I have done a lot of work to get the pronunciations of things right. If I drop something, which chances are good, I'm going to drop a couple of things wrong.
Oh.
I apologize in advance.
Well, that's all right.
Okay, back to Devin's question several minutes ago, which is, what's a luchador?
What is a luchador?
Okie doke. Luchadors are wrestlers.
Oh. Huh.
Luchadors are part of a sport which is called Lucha Libre, which loosely translates to English as free fight. Lucha Libre is kind of similar to professional wrestling that you'll see in the U.S., which is, it's non-Greco-Roman wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like the professional wrestling where the guys are big hulking guys and they have these, all have these grievances against one another. And
yeah,
these,
we're talking
death
like
messages, and it,
WWE sort of,
TNA.
John Cena sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
Except that the Lucha Libre is a little unique in terms of, there's a cultural aspect where all of the wrestlers are always seen in the ring as their persona, or outside the ring as their persona, where they're wearing a mask, if not an outfit.
And we're talking like hood masks.
Yeah, full face mask, you know, complete body suits that are color matched. So there are things that you'll see with these where it is very stylistically linked together. The masks are very stylistic, and one wrestler's mask and another wrestler's mask don't look anything alike other than they're a mask, because just the way it's organized. So it's very distinct.
Yeah. Frankly, I've always been a little creeped out by those masks.
Yeah, I would agree with that, actually.
Well, you know, it's funny, though, is that most people probably will know what we're talking about because there's so much pop culture stuff that's been done. I mean, there's cartoons. There was Mucha Lucha, which was on TV for several years, which was a cartoon.
Or Strong Bad.
Strong Bad Strong from Bad. Homestar Runner.
Yeah.
Although, my favorite thing about Strong Bad, have you ever caught the joke of Strong Bad?
No.
He's wearing a luchador mask. But he also wears boxing gloves.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
So there's this weird little joke in who he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nacho Libre also. I don't think he wore the mask. I didn't see the movie.
I didn't watch that. That's one of those ones I wasn't going
to
watch.
You're
after
starting
after
to
Jack
get
Black
the idea.
Made that movie where poop disappeared, I kind of stopped watching his movies.
I literally have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't think I saw that one either.
You're lucky.
Yeah. Mm.
What movie was that?
Ben Stiller was in it. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, really.
Don't go down that alley. I'm going to go on record here as saying, in regards to Lucha Libre, it's all fake.
What?
Yeah,
at least I'm
really?
Pretty sure it's all fake, and I'm pretty sure that's a well-accepted fact.
I don't know about that, Steve.
Okay, so American WWE / TNA wrestling, people still try to pretend that's real. But the reading that I got, that I did, I get the feeling that, you know, people who watch Lucha Libre, they get that it's kind of made up.
Well, of course it is.
Now, okay, so I've gone ahead and I've pissed off sports fans on this entire continent at this point.
I'm sure not many of our listeners are wrestling fans. But, you know, it all makes sense. I mean, if you're going out into the ring, like, you know, five times a week or whatever, and actually really going at it, you can't just do that all the time. You get to get injured a lot.
Oh, you
know?
Did either of you watch matches for this?
I have seen them before. Yeah. I didn't for this.
I was cracking up watching some of the matches where they are just, they're all super macho and they're buff and it's so hard. And then one guy smacks into another guy and that guy goes completely flaccid and falls down and then jumps up and is suddenly just energized. It's so hilarious.
Yeah,
one of my
sure.
favorites is one, like one guy's down in the center of the ring and the other guy starts running back and forth, corner to corner, bouncing off the rope.
To give him time to get his wits about him.
I mean, the idea, I think, is that he's like building up momentum and speed, you know, when really all he's doing is running back and forth.
But then he falls on top of the guy. Yeah. To fall, hilarious. Right? Yeah. To fall. It's not even like you're going to run.
He's building up static electricity is what he's doing.
Yeah, probably. And then you see him like do the other one with the guys down, and he climbs up on the ropes in the corner and then jumps off on the guy, jumps on top of him, and then just lands next to him, and his arm is actually the only part of him that hits the guy's body.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's just totally, the whole thing is just hilarious.
It's hilarious. Yeah, it's so much fun to watch as long as you keep that in mind, because I laugh for a good 15 minutes watching these.
Yeah.
They are so fun.
Yeah.
But that's enough about the little precursor bits. Let's get into our mystery. Are we ready to rumble?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wrong sport.
No, right sport. Sorry.
Boxing.
Let's get ready to rumble. You're right.
Yeah. Okay, so Palomeque had been wrestling for about 2 decades. He began his career in 1987. At that time, he was under the character or ring name of Alex Dynamo. And then several years later, and of course, masks and costume changes, began wrestling as Pequeño Samurai, which translates to Little Samurai.
Aww. What did his costume look like? A samurai?
You're gonna have to look it up right now. I'm gonna tell you that it doesn't look like a samurai.
Okay,
I'm just gonna tell you, no swords involved. It is wrestling.
Man. Oh, that's too bad.
He then again later, several years later, changed his outfit again and his persona, and in 1992 became Winners. That's the character's name, Winners. At which point he actually enjoyed a lot of success.
Yeah, he did. He had a pretty good career there for a while before he started circling the drain. That name, Winners, it's just not ominous enough sounding.
Okay, so there's this funny thing in Lucha Libre where there's Rudios, which are the rude boys, that's your bad guys,
mm-hmm.
and then there's the good guys. And the Rudios always have these kind of sinister names, and the good guys have these very simple, clean, pure names.
Ah, I see.
And so Winners, or Winner, depending on how you see it written, he was a good guy. So it's kind of that clean, pure name. So that's why I believe that's why it was only Winner instead of the Olympic champion Winners or something crazy like that.
And then he went over to the dark side and became a Abismo Negro.
He did. Yeah. He did eventually do that. But here's something that we got to point out about the wrestling sport itself, mm-hmm. which is, things are done with luchadors. There are leagues or federations, and people might be sort of familiar with this with other sports. You know, you see the majors and the minors and the semi-pro leagues and all this stuff. The thing about the Lucha Libre is that there are these leagues or federations, whatever you want to call them, that all operate at the same level independent of one another. So there are, we actually mentioned this briefly earlier, in the U.S. there is the WWE, the World Wrestling Entertainment.
Formerly WWF.
And there is also TNA, Total Total nonstop action.
Which I never heard of before, you know, this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I heard of it for years, but I always thought it was part of TNT, the TV channel.
Yeah.
But it's not. But these are two leagues that are on the same level, but they are completely autonomous of one another.
Yeah, their wrestlers don't cross over and wrestle their guys.
And if they do, they full on leave one side and begin to operate inside the circles of the other. They don't go back and forth.
There's no crossover. Now, so they wear the luchador masks and the costumes and all that stuff. Is it publicized who's behind that mask, or is it just, you know, when they're talking about the fights, are they saying this person is this person, or are they just saying, and it's this person?
They always refer, at least in my experience, mm-hmm. and again, I don't know a lot of Spanish. I don't watch a lot, so I can't give good firsthand knowledge of this, but what I understand is everybody kind of knows who's behind the mask.
Mm-hmm.
But when the mask is on,
it doesn't matter.
That is the character, okay. And that is who you talk about.
Okay.
You don't say, and Bob Jones playing the whatever.
Well, of course not.
That's not the way it goes.
Right.
And it's his character.
Right.
It's like watching a play.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, as an example, in the WWF when I was a kid, so there was Hulk Hogan. Everybody knew who Hulk Hogan was. Well, that's kind of his name.
Yeah.
But then there's Jake the Snake.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jake's last name was not Snake. His
character
was Jake the Snake.
Uh-huh.
He had a last name. His first name happened to be Jake,
mm-hmm.
but they never said Jake the Snake, a.k.a. whatever his full name was.
What about The Undertaker?
That was not his real name.
That's not his legal name?
No.
Oh, man.
No,
I have some apology letters to write.
You do.
Yeah.
We are way off track.
Yeah.
Okay, so we were talking about the leagues.
Yeah.
That's what we were talking about. Okay, so Palomeque was originally, he was wrestling under, it's commonly the abbreviation in English is CMLL, which is Consejo Mundial de Lucha Libre, which is Spanish for World Wrestling Council, and that was when he was under the characters of Alex Dynamo and Pequeño Samurai. And then after 1992, he went over to what you see commonly referred to as AAA Promotions, which I'm actually not going to try and say this one in Spanish because I know I'll butcher it really badly. Which in Spanish translated to English, it is Assistance, Counseling, and Administration Promotions, which is why everybody calls it AAA, because it sounds much sexier that way. But when he was, when Palomeque was at AAA, that's when he started his winners, and he had a lot of success with them. And then in 1997, he changed from one of the good guys to the bad guys. He changed his character, and that's when he became Abismo Negro.
Which is the Black Abyss, which we haven't actually said yet, I don't think.
It is absolutely correct. We have not said that.
Just wanna make sure.
The direct translation, so this is the funny thing. Joe and I chatted about this a little bit earlier. The direct translation in English is Abyss Black. But it is properly translated Black Abyss.
Yeah, it's one of those nuances of translation.
It is, and it plays a bit of a role later on as we go through things. But he had a lot of success. Like I said, he made that transition in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of their top wrestlers at AAA. In 2004, he was good enough that he actually got into an exchange program with TNA here in the U.S., and he, for a year, wrestled in matches in the States.
With the luchador mask and stuff?
With the mask.
That's
and everything.
Crazy. Okay,
that's
yeah.
Cool.
Before he eventually went back. And it's funny, I watched some of those matches, and it's kind of terrible, and shame on TNA for doing this a little bit. I mean, he knows English, but he plays totally dumb, like he doesn't know English, and they play that up.
Mm.
It's a weird stereotype thing. It was awkward. Still totally hilarious to watch him running around, smacking guys in the face. But, yeah, it was a little strange.
Mm. Well, wrestling is a little strange.
Yeah, the whole thing's a little strange.
Strange to me is why people watch that, but hey.
If the people who watch it and take it seriously is what I don't get.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, I have made all those people angry once, so we're not going to keep doing that.
Okay.
Let's move forward. So after, he goes to the States, he's on the TNA matches for a year. He starts to hit what I would call a rough patch. starts missing matches on a relatively regular basis, and based on the reading that I've done, he's generally starts to be considered unreliable, as in not showing up for matches.
That's kind of a bummer.
Good. Yeah, that's too bad.
Hundreds of thousands of people show up for a four-match night, and one of the guys doesn't show. They just paid for a three-match night, and they're not happy.
Well, but so here's a question. Mm-hmm. I mean, they wear a costume and a mask.
Somebody just swap in
a mask. Is there no option, for there to just have somebody else go on as him?
I think that might have been done a few times.
So there is ways that happens. There are some negative repercussions that come about from that. We're going to talk about some of that.
Personally or
both for publicly? Both for the reputation of the character, mm-hmm. as well as the organizer of the event, depending upon how they go about it.
Okay.
We can just jump to this. There's a bit where somebody goes on stage pretending to be our wrestler, our luchador here, and it is not actually him, and they bill it as him, mm-hmm. and don't make any mention that they have a fill-in pretending. And when it comes out what happened, that promoter gets banned for 2 years.
Mm. Okay, mm-hmm. So we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah,
okay.
So it's possible. I know exactly where you're heading with that, but it's...
considered bad form.
It's terrible form, yeah. So the problem is he's missing these matches because according to the rumors that were floating about, and this is for a good number of years, he really likes some drugs. He especially seems to have been fond of cocaine.
A lot of people are.
A lot of people do like cocaine. To the length that he is reported to have wrestled for drugs, as well as possibly have done it in the locker room, in the open, with other wrestlers.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Maybe this sounds like rude, but don't you kind of think you'd want to be high if you were doing this for a living? If you're going to go like fake a fight, don't you think maybe you want to get high before that?
I can't believe I'm about to do this, but I'm going to defend wrestling in a way that I never thought I was going to do.
Yes, that was my goal.
Okay, so let's think about this. A match is choreographed. You go to the ballet, and these dancers have trained, and they know their steps and their routines, and where they're supposed to be, where their marks are on stage the entire time as they're moving about rapidly with up to, I don't know how many of them are on stage, but a bunch of people. Okay, now let's think about that from the point of a wrestler. There are two of you. You are choreographed to do very specific things, which are feats of athleticism. The last thing you want is the other dude high as a kite and missing his mark and bringing his elbow down, not on the mat next to your head, but on your throat. There's a lot of choreography and actual skill involved. I get that wrestling is a joke, but there's a ton of skill involved that to look real.
But if you toot a few lines before the match, it won't necessarily make you less sharp.
2 points. One, you used a ballerina, which was maybe a bad example because I know I'm going to get some flack for this, but a lot of ballerinas do cocaine,
mm-hmm.
like a lot of them.
Do they?
Almost all of them.
I understand that.
Please don't send me angry emails.
So luchadors and tutus, got
sure.
it?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's been a thing. But I guess point two is I don't know the history well enough to know, maybe he was actually a serious wrestler and hated the fact that he sold out, and so he wanted to get high so he wasn't so embarrassed by it.
I don't think that you can get into the sport. I mean, he started in the sport at 14.
Yeah.
He started professionally. I mean, his debut, he was a 16-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
So he, at this point, in the story, when he dies, he's almost a 40-year-old man. He's been doing it for years. If he had a problem with it,
he would have gotten out of it.
Would have been very obvious many, many years ago.
Mostly, don't know why I'm even bringing this stuff up, because I feel like it's just not an issue that he was doing cocaine. I mean, obviously, it's an issue that anybody's doing cocaine, but...
I, but, well, it, again...
Something, but...
There's a certain level of physical control that you have to have to pull off some of these things. I mean, you see these crazy flying moves that these guys do, and if you are blitzed in any way...
Well, it's not heroin, I mean...
But if you are not in your most soberest state of mind, bad things can happen.
Can.
Maybe.
So, that's why I say that.
Okay.
But the point is, he apparently liked his drugs. And like I said, to put all the drugs on the table, he liked to do coke. And it is also rumored that, as a lot of guys at the time and previous to him were doing, he was also on anabolic steroids.
And now, is that proven that he was on steroids?
It's not.
Just suspected?
No, no. Thank you, Joe. It is very highly suspected, but there is nothing that I have found that says definitively he was on steroids. Palameke evidently knew, or somebody around him knew that there was a problem, because he apparently went into rehab several times. And I also am under the understanding that AAA banned him a couple of times, maybe not officially, but he would come and go in the scene.
Well, if you're missing matches, obviously they're going to do something to you.
I think it was probably something in the order of, you know, go away, go into rehab, get yourself cleaned up, and then come back someday whenever you, you know.
Right, and so then they would let him come back, and he would seem fine, and then the cycle would start again, and then things would go bad, and they'd kick him out. Now, AAA, they were trying to figure out what to do, because his character was pretty popular, and they needed a Rudio in that.
He was still Winners at that time, right?
No. He was
already at Beast Mode Negro?
He was a Beast Mode Negro at this point, because he had gone to that character in 1997.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
This character is really, fans loved him because he did this weird thing. He loved to bring out a lighter and a can of hairspray or something like that. And he was doing the flamethrower, walking down through a crowd of people with fire. Like, people loved this crap. So he was very popular. AAA is trying to figure out what they're going to do, because their very popular Rudio is suddenly super unreliable. And what do? They go ahead and they introduce a new Rudio, who is Black Abyss.
Mm-hmm. In English, right?
In English. Mm. Very similar costume. They pitch these guys against each other as a gimmick several times, and you watch it. I had a hard time keeping straight who was who. I had to dial the video back to look at the colors of who did what, because the costumes are so similar. But they did this as a way of, well, you know, if you kind of screw it up, we're gonna kick you out, and we're just gonna replace you with Black Abyss. So, you know, get your stuff together, man.
Yeah.
It's funny, but it didn't seem to fix the problem. So let's move to the last days of Palameke's life. In 2009, Palameke took part in the King of Kings event, which was in Guadalajara. And that happened on either the 14th or the 15th of March is when it began. I had a hard time pinning down the exact date, but I think that's because the reporting is based on matches and not the event itself. But the point is, he was eliminated in the first round. He is then known to have been wrestling at an event in Mazatlan on the 16th of March, and he was subsequently supposed to be at a match on the 21st at another city in Mexico, and he no-showed that event.
The 21st?
The 21st event. He was at the one on the 16th and then didn't show for the one 5 days later on the 21st.
Maybe he forgot.
Maybe he was, you know.
High.
Yeah, because it's rumored that he stayed in Mazatlan and he went on a coke bender for at least 5 days, until which point he ran out of money.
Yeah.
And this, by the way, I don't know this for sure. I want to put that out there. This is based on the reporting that is done. His family has never said this, and we don't have a real clear accounting of his actions during that time from the match on the 16th forward.
Okay.
So we don't know this for sure. This is strongly believed, but not 100% proven. He's either supposed to be on the 21st. He was either supposed to be in Monterey or in Cancun. I don't know which one, but instead what he does is he leaves Mazatlan and he heads home on a bus to Mexico City. So it goes in the wrong direction entirely.
Yeah.
Like he just blows off the match. He wants to go home. To get home, like I said, he got on a bus. And this is another bit of weirdness in the reporting, which is he got on the bus either on Friday the 20th or Saturday the 21st. And here's why I think it's weird is that the bus left at 12:30 in the morning. So my impression is that the bus probably actually left on Saturday morning at 12:30 a.m.
Probably.
But the way it's reported, you'll see it said that he got on a bus on Friday and blah, 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 blah.
Well, maybe it was Friday when he got on the bus.
Well, he certainly probably showed up at the bus station on Friday.
No, yeah. You guys are both right. But you will also see it said definitively that he got on a bus that left at this time, and he got on, and it was his Saturday was the day that the bus departed town.
Well,
like,
you know,
it's weirdness, but I'm pretty sure that it was the
reporting.
morning hours of Saturday. Yes. He got on Friday night.
It's okay.
It's weird, important. But... Yeah. About an hour into the trip, so this is about 1:30 a.m., Palomeque, reportedly he became agitated. You see this described as having a nervous breakdown.
Mm.
It was to the point that he got up, he went to the driver, and he made the driver of the bus stop the bus, and he got off the bus on the edge of the highway. Now, this happens near the town of El Rosario. The bus driver evidently must have reported this to his superiors because they knew where they dropped him off.
How far is El Rosario from Mazatlan?
It's miles. It's not hundreds. It's more like a dozen, maybe two dozen miles away.
Oh.
At the very most. I would say it's
a slow bus.
What's that?
That's a slow bus.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Mazatlan to El Rosario, it was an hour drive, which means it must have been about 50 miles.
Okay.
I apologize. No, I was thinking of the bus stopped outside, north of the town of El Rosario, based on what I figured out.
Okay.
That's where I was getting that mixed up. So it's about an hour away, about 60, 50 miles.
So he's agitated. He gets off the bus.
Yep. And he walks away from the bus and shortly thereafter texts his wife and says something to the effect of, he's lost in the dark in the hills.
Mm-hmm.
She, fearing for, you know, him, what's going on, she contacts a promoter that they know who's in Mazatlan to, you know, get a search party and go look for him. That search party, I have to presume, didn't start that night, but probably started the next morning. They went around town. They showed his picture around. Nobody recognized him, at which point they began to search outside of the town. The searchers found Palomeque's body.
And I believe it wasn't just these private parties. It was by this time the police also.
Yes,
right?
The police were involved. Yes. I mean, this is just people looking for him, I guess, is what I meant, is they started the search party in general. I excluded the police. That's my bad. They go looking for him. Sunday, March 22nd, they find his body face down under a bridge in a body of water. Like I said,
very
small body of water. It's the dry season. It's one of those bridges, you may have seen this before, it's a concrete bridge, and there is a river, and concrete walls have been built up on either side of the bank of the river vertically, and then the bridge sits on top of those. So it makes kind of a channel.
Yeah.
And the center between the concrete creates a divot. That's where the body of water was, almost directly under the bridge, and that's where his body was found floating.
Mm-hmm.
Which is weird. Again, it's one of the few places where the water could have accumulated. Mm-hmm. Now, I in the reading, they never say specifically where it is.
Did they find a smiley face drawn anywhere near the body?
Not that I ever saw. But it's entirely possible
old.
That it
he
may have
old.
Been may
oh,
have been
true.
Cut out.
He wasn't,
no, he was too old.
He wasn't in college either, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. My bad.
Oh, he may have been in the Lucha Libre fraternity.
Probably not, though.
Now, as I said before, though, we don't know exactly. The reporting doesn't specify where the bridge is. This is a failing. I reported this, by the way. This is a failing on the part of Google Translate. There appears to be in the town of El Rosario a citrus company, and according to the translated text, it is a bridge that is citrus company tall. So I've reported that issue. But it appears to be several miles north of the town on the 15 Mazatlan Tepic Highway is where he was found. He was found in the report. Again, this is the weird part. The reporting says that the body was found in the Belhuarte River, which actually is south of the town. And if you look at it on satellite, there's these really big bridges with big pillars, and nothing matches the crime scene photos. There is, however, a small stream that flows into the Belhuarte that starts north of the town. It's really weird. You have to follow the freeway to figure out exactly where his body is. The point is, he's found in the river. I know I took that way too far, but
he's found in the creek, not the river.
It's basically a creek. He's found in a depression in the ground that's full of water. Initially, the official cause of death is nervous breakdown caused by steroids, and that nervous breakdown is what caused him to fall in the water and get stuck in the mud, and because he was unable to pull himself out of the mud, drown.
I mean, I have problems with that, but I also, like...
I have huge problems with that, but yes. But drowning also is the official COD, though.
Yeah, I mean, if I don't know what happens when you're having a nervous breakdown. I mean,
we're going to get into some theories.
We will.
We're going to get into some, much more. I know. I understand. More. So let me finish this last. We got just a last little bit here, and then we'll get into theories. There is an autopsy performed apparently on the body, but once they figure out that, yeah, there's water in his lungs, they stop doing anything else because they figured out why he died. They don't ever try to figure out what caused his mental breakdown.
And so they stopped the autopsy when they found the water. They didn't like check his heart to see if he'd had a heart attack or anything like that, or
nothing is reported along those lines. Nothing says that. And here's the problem is that the like I said in the beginning, the initial the medical examiner is like, well, he was obviously on steroids and that's the problem and that's what caused all of this. And oh, look, I found water in his lungs and I'm done. At which point, kind of similarly to what we talked about in the Cobain case, body is turned over to the family. The family has the body cremated in a matter of days after the fact, and we have no records of what was discovered or how much investigation they actually did during that autopsy.
I find it hard to believe that they would just say, oh, water in the lungs, we're done. No, we're not going to do anything else. That's it. Nope. Yeah. Everybody pack it up. That seems odd to me. It's possible that that's all they reported. But I can't imagine.
In a small town in rural Mexico, it could be that I don't have the time or the funding to do a whole lot. Look, I found water in the lungs. I get to sign off and say this is what happened and get my 5 minutes in the sun. The news loves me. I pronounce Abismo Negro died of drowning.
Yeah, but sure. That guy... You said it was a small town. Was he actually a forensic pathologist, or was he perhaps just a regular doctor who was contracted to...
He was the local medical examiner.
Oh, so it was then. Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know. Local, does that mean that it's a 100-mile radius area? I don't know how big of a range he covered. I couldn't find that.
Yeah.
Because this is one of those weird... It's kind of an area where there's not a whole lot of information available.
Okay.
I don't know exactly how big of a spread he covered.
All right.
There's one last thing, which I know we actually talked about this just a little bit ago, which is the 21st of March, which was a Saturday. Abismo Negro should have been there at a match. And
in Cancun, right?
Yeah, and he was. He was wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He wrestled that night, and the crowd loved it. He was
Even
there.
Even though he was already dead.
Even though apparently he was either already dead or
having a mental breakdown on a train or
on a bus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is the part I talked about where it was found out later on that somebody had dressed up in an outfit looking like him and took to the ring. Now, Black Abyss, the character whose name is in English, had been known to come and fill in when he wouldn't show up, except Black Abyss was at a match somewhere else.
Yeah. As Black Abyss.
So as Black Abyss.
So somebody else had to come in there and do Abismo Negro.
Right, and they didn't say anything, and it came out, and it was a huge egg-on-the-face situation. But that's one of those things that people use as a conspiracy line of, well, obviously they knew that something was going to happen to him, and they'd booked somebody else to come in as him ahead of time. Somebody had given him wind that this thing was going to go down.
Maybe. Mm-hmm.
This is one of those things that you see happen.
Seems wrong.
Yeah, you know, maybe, or maybe they got wind that he was on a 5-day coke bender and they decided they were going to need a replacement, most likely.
That's possible.
Yeah.
Absolutely possible. Well, let's go ahead, and that's the end of the story. Let's move right into theories.
Yeah.
Because there's actually a good number of theories, though they're all pretty interlinked, but
they're kind of like small variants on one another.
A little bit.
Yeah.
So, theory number one is
UFOs.
Not UFOs.
Oh. Chupacabra.
Yeah.
Or, well, actually, you know what?
Could be. Mexico.
Could be.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? Never steal coke from a chupacabra.
For real, though.
Dude.
That's a bad
idea. Grudge. Mm-hmm. Lifetime grudge. And by lifetime, I mean your short remaining amount of lifetime.
Because you
can get
you're hour
done.
Man.
All right, so let's get back to reality here, which is that the theory is that Palomeque was murdered by a cocaine dealer and or a drug cartel.
A.K.A. the Chupacabra.
Yes.
Of course.
So, we talked about the fact that he had a penchant for cocaine, apparently, according to the reporting.
Sure.
And when you like to do lots of drugs, you end up hanging out with the people who supply you those drugs. And those don't tend to be the most reputable people around.
Often the case.
So, the theory goes that Palomeque, he's hanging out with these people. He pisses off the wrong person, presumably a drug dealer. And my guess would be that this would have had to have happened in Mazatlan. And that dealer, that angry drug dealer, then says that you're going to get it. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to get you for this, which is what prompts him to leave town quite quickly on a bus. And what prompts him then to have his panic attack or freak out and get off of the bus and send this panicky text to his wife? I don't know. I mean, it's possible that maybe the guy was also texting him, though I've never found any records of that. His wife has never provided anything that supports this at all.
I suppose his phone was in his pocket when he was found, and probably it was wet, and they probably couldn't really restore anything.
I would presume that would be the case. There's no mention of where his phone was recovered. That's another interesting fact.
This case has actually not been recovered.
Yeah,
he might have dropped it and lost it somewhere. But
he may very well. But
I have a few theories on this one.
Okay, well let me finish just the theory itself, or do you want to push him in now?
Go ahead.
Okay, so basically this theory is that he's in contact with this drug person. I know that sounds silly, but drug person. And that freaks him out. He gets off the bus. Somehow they find him and either A, shove him off of the bridge into the water, or are on the bank with him and drag him into the water and hold him under the water until he expires.
I just had a couple thoughts.
Okay.
You know, in terms of if somebody was following him or not. Okay, somebody could have been texting him. He could have had an additional phone. If he was doing lots of drugs, he probably had a burner.
Right? Could have been somebody who was on the bus with him.
That was the other thing I was going to say, is it could have been somebody who was on the bus with him. Or it could have been that if a drug dealer was thinking, oh, I'm going to kill this guy, he provided him with some less than pure drugs, or some drugs with some laced with something of some kind that he did either right before he got on the bus or while he was on the bus that caused his panic attack. I mean, it's not a direct hand of I literally held this guy's head under the water and killed him, but if you send him into a panic attack on a bus in the middle of nowhere, he's probably going to have a panic attack and somehow find himself dead or otherwise locked up.
I wonder if somebody could have slipped him a little LSD.
Yeah, or, you know, or all you do is you give him bad drugs and then have one of your guys be on the bus with him.
But then,
just to ensure, you
but
know.
Nobody was witness getting off the bus after him.
No,
right?
I don't, and I don't mean that. I mean that, you know, you do your drugs and then you start to slip into this paranoia and you look up and there's one of the guys who is your drug dealer's henchman and you think.
Staring at you.
Oh my God, I have to get off this bus. So he gets off the bus and nobody follows him, which is fine, but he's still in this panic state of what's going to happen? What's going to happen? I have to get away. I have to get away. I have to get away.
See, the thing about that is that if the henchman is there, scaring him, then getting off the bus in the middle of nowhere really makes no sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because, but I'm not. Yeah. But we're not saying that he's, as Steve would say, we're not thinking rational thought here.
You took it right out of my mouth.
Very drugged up thought.
Yeah, there's that. But the other thing, too, is if you're going to send a hit squad out to find him, well, number one, how do you find him out there in the dark? But
maybe following the bus. If you're in a car following the bus and your henchman on the bus says, he just got off. Did you see us stop?
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah.
Although, if I was going to go after Abismo Negro, I'm going to have a pretty healthy sized team. Because
I would think that they would use weapons that were not just their hands.
Yeah,
because the guy.
Unless you've drugged him really well.
True.
But Abismo Negro, I don't think we mentioned it. Before he got into wrestling, he was into martial arts big time, too.
So, well,
he's a big, strong guy.
He's a big, strong guy. He's been doing this for 20 years. That means he's very muscular. He knows how to handle himself. He fights for a living.
Well, kind of.
Play
but he does physical work for a living. He's a big guy.
Yeah.
It's not as if I, as a scrawny 40-year-old guy with a pot belly, is going to run up to him and yell at him and he's be like, oh, scared of you.
That's
not easy. He's gonna look at me and smack me in the head.
Probably.
And I'm gonna have a concussion.
So here's another question. We said it was dry season, but there was this kind of pond area. The shore around this dry or this pond area, was it dry or was it wet?
It's a very good question. There's only two images that I could find. Those images seem to indicate that it was kind of a clayish riverbed.
Okay.
And that right up against the water, it is soppy clay, and then outside of that, it's kind of hard dirt.
Okay, yeah, that answers my
question. So there should be footprints of some kind.
The hard dirt, it's easy to get rid of footprints. Clay, less wet clay, it's hard, very hard to get rid of them.
Yeah.
But then again, if there are footprints there, that's not necessarily a shocker anyway.
That's true, and also there are enough people out searching that there's nothing to say
that the scene wasn't swamped.
Right. Yeah. And that the first person who was there didn't say, and I noticed there were a lot of footprints around. They would just be like, oh my God, we found him. And everyone would come running and say, oh, we found him. And then.
Yeah, next thing you know. That's when whenever I murder somebody that way, I always bring several sets of shoes along so I can leave
just
all kinds of footprints.
Them.
Yeah.
Joe is
that's where my shoes have been going.
He does have small feet.
He does. Very
or
petite.
You have big feet. One of the two.
Yeah.
let's go on to the next theory, which is that he drowned due to his panic attack or psychosis, which was caused by his use of steroids.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to say this again. We don't know that he was on steroids, but there is so much friggin' talk about it that you can't ignore it.
Well, it occurs to me that it is totally possible, even probable, that the medical examiner came back and said, yeah, he drowned. He was on a lot of steroids and a lot of coke and a lot of other things. And the family said, cool, he drowned.
So what's the, what was
you know, you wouldn't necessarily then publicize, and he was on tons of drugs and he did it to himself. You would probably downplay that as much as possible say he drowned.
But yeah, for his dignity.
What were the results of the toxicology report, if one was done?
That's a very good question, Joe. I never found that because I don't believe it was ever publicized.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm saying it must have been, but yeah.
I mean, it could have been done.
Let's back this train up for a second, though. We say one must have been done. We don't know what the standard practice is in this rural, this small area. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to sound like a jerk who's belittling the medical practitioners in Mexico by any way or means.
Well,
but we also don't know that based on their funding, what is their resources? What do they start with? If they go, the easy thing is let's open him up. Oh, look, water's everywhere. Done deal. It's easy. I mean, we don't know. And I don't know that, and I don't want to put any, you know, anything on anybody, but as far as I know, that wasn't done. But let's continue to run down the steroids line.
Yeah, sure.
Because I got a hold of some of our experts, and there's a lot of conflicting information about the psychological effects of anabolic steroids.
Apparently, some of that stuff about roid rage is...
it's a little inflated.
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit inflated.
Well, it's hard. I mean, it's hard because you can't really study it.
That's a good point. And yeah, so here's the deal. On their own, anabolic steroids, which for anybody who doesn't know, that's the thing that guys take to pump themselves up. Pump you up.
Mm-hmm. We're going to pump you up.
Exactly. All right. These are the things that people take to get big, but they do have the potential to cause behavioral changes. And these behavioral changes don't come on suddenly. They're things that build up over time. The side effects, according to the studies, though, these behavioral side effects, only occur in 2-3% of users. But there's a couple of things to point out about the studies, the first of which is that they presume, and in the studies, the users are only using one kind of steroid. Well, turns out guys who are juicing use multiple types at once, and they do what's called pyramiding, where they will go in a, let's say it's a 12-week rotation, so they'll build up for 6 weeks and taper off for 6 weeks. But 2 weeks later, they'll start another kind of steroid. So they're constantly in this cycle with multiple kinds at once. Well, in the studies, because they're clinical studies, they can't do that.
Yeah.
That's one thing that's not factored in. The other thing about the studies is that they eliminate people who have a potential psychological issue.
Like a pre-existing one.
Yes.
Yeah, you want blank slates as case study. But who do that stuff aren't blank slates.
No!
Yeah.
But therein lies another problem.
But Abismo didn't. Did he have a history of psychiatric problems?
Not that we know of.
No, but I mean, the other thing that you don't really necessarily take into consideration in studies like this, right? Abismo Negro probably had like a couple concussions,
yeah,
right?
Very possible.
There was probably a little bit of that sort of thing going on. And we know now from a lot of studies that are being done in America that that can have profound, prolonged, and also delayed effects on your brain and the way that it works.
And
so if you're also doing steroids on top of that.
And then those things can systematically get worse and worse and worse.
And then, of course, he stops off in Mazatlantar and snorts about a half a pound of cocaine.
On top of steroids, maybe, and then you're just done. You're done.
Yeah,
who knows how pure the cocaine is, right?
Well, okay. Not very.
So let's take the coke out of the situation. This theory is not so much centered in the cocaine, but just that, let's say he's at the peak of a pyramid of a cycle of his steroid use. That could have been enough to just push him over the edge.
Yeah.
So then it all builds up to this psychosis where he suddenly has this breakdown on the bus. The only thing that kind of lends itself possibly to indicate that this could be right is that I said before he was at a match on the 16th. Because he had been at the King of Kings match on the 14th or the 15th, whichever it was, and he got knocked out in the first round, and then he goes to this other match, which sounded like it was kind of a house match or a town match. I don't, you know, it was just kind of a local event, but he was booked for it. He was despondent is the phrase that I saw used. He was not happy. He was complaining to the other wrestlers. Now, maybe that's, I'm not getting used enough. They're leaving me out. Because I'm always missing my matches. I mean, I don't know what it is, but people have pointed that and say, well, his behavior was, he was on kind of a downward trend and was about to break.
Well, you know, he was kind of on a downward train there. You know, so, I would be depressed if I were him, too.
Yeah. And so if you follow the finality of this, it says that he had his break. This is, of course, because it's due to the steroids. Steroids cause the break. He then gets off of the bus. He is completely unaware of his surroundings and either wanders into the water and is so unaware that he aspirates water and drowns, or We've said this before, the water is shallow, like waist deep shallow. It's entirely possible that he was on the bridge. He wanders over the edge of the bridge and falls over the rail.
How high was the bridge, though?
I would say that bridge was 20, 25 feet high. What? Joe, what is that in meters, by the way? That's what, 10, 15? 10, 12?
Oh, God. Let me think.
Three, that's 10, 12. Yeah, 10, 12 six. Meters.
I would, I guess I would say that if you fell face first off of something like that, your face would be pretty mashed up. Yeah, that'd be something.
You would think.
I spent a lot of time thinking about this. Let's say he falls off the railing and he lands on anywhere that is not head first. So he is in a prone position when he hits.
You're still going to break, bruising. Lots of outward damage will happen from a fall like that.
But not enough that I think that if he's been soaking in the drink for a day, it's going to be super noticeable. And my point is that he would be stunned and then drowned.
Hmm.
You're right. There should be outward signs, but there's a whole bunch of details of outward signs that we have no record of.
That's fair. Yeah.
I'm kind of doubting that he fell off the bridge, though, because I don't know what the standards are for railings in Mexico, but I assume they're kind of similar to what we have here.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a roadside bridge. It's about waist high.
Yeah,
I was on Google Maps. I was pulling a Joe. I was on Google Maps doing Street View, and I drove across that bridge, and it's about waist high.
Yeah. So if you seriously want to get over that, you're going to have to probably do it deliberately. You're not just going to trip and fall off
the bridge. Well, you might. The other thing I do want to just point out real quick here is I don't know if you guys have seen this video or not, because I know we're going to talk about more. He was just panicking and drowned theories. There's this video of this little kid who I don't know. I don't remember where he is, but he's like probably 5 or 6 years old, and he's clinging to a rope, floating on his back, like crying because he thinks he's going to drown, until suddenly his older sister or mom or somebody comes over and just kind of pushes his legs down. And it turns out it's been like lower than waist deep, this water, the entire time. But he was so sure, and I've seen this happen to other people too. Sometimes you get so sure that you're drowning, you just panic and don't do anything actually helpful. You're just thinking you're drowning.
You
you just seize up, or you start flailing around thinking, oh my God, I'm drowning because my face is covered in water, without thinking, my back is dry though, or I could stand up. You know, if you're entirely submerged, your head is entirely submerged, you're probably just going to think, I'm drowning. And if you're already having a panic attack or some kind of mental break, you're probably not going to be able to do anything helpful. So I do want to bring that up a little bit.
Yeah. No, so that's
entirely possible.
As we
talk about that, in saying that, it's only waist deep, but it's still waist deep, and that's enough to submerge your head fully.
So, and I also, I'm going to move a theory that was at the end of this. I'm going to actually shuttle this forward. We're going to talk about this now, which is that let's take the psychological break out of it, okay? It's entirely possible. So I can't explain why he got off the bridge or off of the bus. Excuse me. I can't explain why he got off the bus. But when I talk about the fall bit, it's entirely possible. He's in the dark. It's 1:30 in the morning. He can't see a damn thing.
It's actually well past 1:30 by the time he actually fell into that hole and drowned, probably.
Okay, so it's 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, something. Yeah. It's pitch black out. He can't see crap. And the hole, he fell over the railing. He could have literally been have you ever walked into a wall in the dark and had no idea it was there? He could have been walking and suddenly just pitched over the rail and went down because he had no idea where he was. It's entirely possible. Do I think that's what happened? No. Yeah. But because we're bringing this up, there in the water line below the bridge, the lip of the bridge where he was found, it's not a straight line. It's kind of an undulating shape.
Yeah.
So he would have either, if he fell off the top of the bridge, he would have either A, hit the water, or B, hit the ground. And I'm pretty sure he didn't hit the ground because there's no impression of his body in the shore. And also, it'd be really hard for him to hit hard enough to bounce into the water.
Yeah.
Which makes me think that he would have hit the water. Which again brings me to, he could have hit just right. We talk about this all the time. The odds of this are phenomenal, but it's possible. hits just right where it doesn't leave any outward signs, but it stuns him and he drowns.
Well, and also if you do a belly flop on the water, it's going to knock the wind out of you.
And you're going to suck in.
And you're going to draw air in.
And you're going to draw a lot of water in when you do that.
There's also that phenomenon, which I experienced one time rafting, and I don't know how cold that water was, but when you hit really cold water,
I can't imagine it was cold, Joe. It was the dry season. It was warm.
This was March, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose it wouldn't have been that cold.
It's not freezing cold. Gasp reflex.
It's just a gasp reflex.
Because you hit the water
what
hard.
You have.
You get the water, the wind knocked out of you.
Yeah, or you're so stunned, you just like are out of it. And you just, you know, damn. I tend to think he just stumbled into it, or maybe fell off the bridge myself.
Yeah, well, like, let's keep going though, because we've talked about this enough so far, but we got more theories
somehow.
Okay, next theory is that this is related, very similar to the last one, is that
the one before last.
Yeah, because I moved one up. He drowned. His panic attack or psychosis, whichever it is, was caused by actually not steroids, but steroid withdrawal. Because one of our experts that I was talking with was bringing up the fact that, while the psychosis can happen, it actually is a little more prevalent when somebody goes cold turkey. That's the problem. Is you just suddenly get off the sauce. Mm. And that might have been what caused him to go off his trolley, as they say, and then get off the bus, be so confused, and whatever happens for him to end up in the water happens.
Is it steroid withdrawal? What withdrawal is it that makes you really thirsty? Do you know?
From water, I think.
Like that you need water.
Yeah, if you haven't had water for a couple of days.
Well, I mean, there are certain drug withdrawals.
There are.
That cause you to be really thirsty. Yeah, I'm just wondering if maybe, like, he was going through some withdrawal of some kind and saw this little thing of water and thought, I will drink from that, but was so messed up.
That he just went in.
That he just went in head first.
I don't know. I mean, when he's
that
in
is
this
accidental
state.
Drowning, technically. So yeah, I guess it's technically fair. Yeah. Okay.
We're gonna go to the next one, which is very similar again, which is that his panic attack or psychosis was caused by none other than cocaine, because it, like we talked about, he seems to have really enjoyed it, and this is a list of side effects that I found. The short term side effects of cocaine are anxiety, paranoia, panic, and some other forms of psychosis. And because he's a user of it, he likes it, he would fall into the category of long-term effects. Those would be auditory and tactile hallucinations, otherwise known as hearing things and feeling things on your skin. Yay. That's a common description. Disorientation, delirium, and confusion. Mm-hmm. So, coke bender, jump off bus, fall off bridge, end up in water is kind of the short of what this one is.
Yeah.
And he was probably lost too, which, believe me, is kind of a panicky feeling right in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. In the very dark of night.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had a cell phone, but we don't know if it had a good flash on it for him to use.
It was 2004, like right?
2009.
Oh.
Okay, so he probably did. He might have had a smartphone. Didn't
he might have had a smartphone.
But
he
might have
not.
Yeah,
we don't know that for sure. Yeah. Moving on again, we have one last theory, which I actually think, personally, I find to be my preferred theory.
Okay.
Which is that he drowned or fell due to a stroke or a heart attack.
Which is not unusual. If you've been doing a lot of coke, heart attacks are not uncommon.
It's also not unknown or unprecedented when you've been doing steroids, because steroids are known to cause people to have strokes and heart attacks. And this isn't necessarily for heavy users. This is just like casual users who work it into their workout routine and suddenly have it. They just suddenly, with no signs previously, have a stroke, have a heart attack, because they decided they were going to juice. And this happens. By the way, did either of you look up the slang for steroids?
No.
Oh, what slang is that?
The names that it gets? This is the best thing ever. I've said it a couple of times. It's juicing, but they call it juicing, gym candy, pumpers, roids, stackers, and are you ready for it?
Yeah.
Arnold's.
I know. Yeah. I love that. That's my favorite.
That's my favorite. Yeah. But
the Schwartzkys.
The Schwartzkys are known for causing heart attacks.
Yeah.
And for causing strokes. So it could have been. He's on the, or maybe it was the Coke. He's on the bus.
Some combination thereof.
He's in the beginning of a heart attack or a stroke, which is known to be a state of delirium.
It's not just delirium. It also causes you to be panicked and uncomfortable.
Yes.
Like very uncomfortable.
Yes.
And also oftentimes like hot, and you try to escape all of the situations that you're in.
I'm pointing at her with the yes finger.
Yeah, that's the yes finger. I mean, you know, both of those. And again, it doesn't necessarily have to be drug induced. It could have been that it was just a blood clot from an injury.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that he just lived a hard lifestyle. It could be that he was genetically disposed to that, maybe. But I mean, if it was a small stroke and all it did was really incapacitate him for enough time that he fell into water and also drowned, it's not unreasonable to assume that the ME would miss something like that. In addition to that, also a heart attack.
In a cursory medical examination or a cursory...
Well, yeah, if you see water in the lungs, you're not going to also do an extensive exam of the heart and brain to see if they had a heart attack or...
Blood clots or damage, yeah.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I could understand why somebody would immediately jump to the drowning conclusion. But the thing about it was, is he was a strong guy. I'm not going to say he was totally healthy, but he's probably fairly healthy.
Mm-hmm. That's my hard part with the, he fell in the mud.
And he couldn't get out.
And
so what would incapacitate somebody? Well, maybe a heart attack, or a stroke.
Yeah.
You know?
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's why I look at something else. It's got to have debilitated him. Mm-hmm. If you have a stroke or you're in the throes of a heart attack, your body is not going to respond. And as I said before, if you're even partially in the water, you're going to breathe it in, then you're going to drown.
Which is a terrible way to go. Maybe lend a little more credence to the fact that he did try to contact his wife. You know, the other theories that we've talked about, we say he was hallucinating, he was in a delirium, but people who are having these really huge psychotic breaks don't necessarily text their significant other and say, I'm lost in the middle of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't contact them, or you say,
you don't think about it.
Or you say, you know, the mushrooms are coming for me, or like something, right? I mean, you're not going to say very calmly, hey, I'm lost in the woods. And granted, I haven't seen the text, so I don't know exactly what his demeanor was, but it would also lead credence to, you know, a heart attack or something where you say, okay, I was just getting out and this happened, or you maybe he had a heart attack and then a stroke.
That's the problem with text messages.
It's hard.
The tone is stripped away. That's why simple text messages can cause giant controversy of the fact that you don't know which way they're meant to go. I am lost does not say angrily, I'm lost, or panically, oh my God, I'm lost. I mean, that doesn't come through.
But none of those are hallucinatory reactions.
Very true.
That is a strange thing. I mean, you know, here he does this loony thing, which is get off the bus, and then he does a rational thing, which is send a text to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know if he was fading in or out or what. I mean, obviously, if he was having a stroke or something was going wrong, staying on the bus and telling the driver to go faster would have been a better solution.
Another 4 to 6 hours to his destination.
Or telling him to turn around to go back to the nearest town.
Oh, you're saying go faster so I can get to help.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's only a 54-minute drive or something like that, according to Google, which probably on a bus is probably like an hour and something drive from point A to point B in the town El Rosario or wherever it was that they were close to. It's not that long. So they were pretty dang close. It would have been easy for him to say, I think something's wrong with me. Get me a doctor.
But it could have my point was he may have said, oh my God, something's wrong. Get me to Mexico City now is the way I was saying. So Joe says make the bus go faster, so he doesn't know El Rosario's there. He may not realize
But
that.
Usually you would say, I don't feel good. I need a doctor. And they would just find a hospital or something, right? As a good bus driver. You wouldn't just say, okay, cool, get off right here.
Yeah, no, that's
the middle of the thing.
And here's my catchphrase, rational thinking. If he's that's
I'm on your side on that. But okay. I think, you know, I know enough about first aid and what people go through aid care in general, emergency care, and what people go through with heart attacks, with strokes, with things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And the reaction is escape. Just get out of. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things they tell you to look for in situations like that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
If someone's nervous and agitated, it's a huge sign that something's going wrong inside their body. Mm-hmm. And that you should get them emergency care as soon as possible.
Got
or
it.
Administer emergency care. So again.
So he stumbles around in the darkness, falls into a mud puddle, and having a heart attack, stroke dies. And yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Are we in consensus here?
Is that
I'm not locked into what caused it. I think that he had either a stroke or a heart attack.
Or an accident.
But I don't know what caused him to end up in the water. That's my problem. Sure. Is that I see one of those as leading him there. But I don't know why it came about. And maybe it is just one of those damn random things. But
yeah.
So I don't know that we're in consensus because I'm not even settled
You're
on.
You're not even in consensus with yourself?
No, mm-hmm. as usual.
Yeah.
Yeah, hard to say. Did his family ever raise a stink about this? Anybody raise any suspicions?
No.
Yeah.
No, I mean his wife, you know, she had him cremated. They had a ceremony. There was a bajillion luchadors there. Black Abyss, his career kind of ended after that. He tried to go on and take over the mantle of Abismo Negro. That didn't go on. He was going to go as Abismo Negro 2. Mm. That didn't work. But that was it. I mean, there's this whole weird thing in the luchador society, but she stepped away from it, as at least from the reporting side of what's been reported.
Sure. Mm. Well, I mean, that does lead credence to the fact that maybe there was something additional in the report, in the autopsy report, that they're just not making public.
Yeah, which that would be understandable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Well,
all right. Well, I guess there's that.
There is that. Give everybody the administrative details that they need to know, which is that this episode and all other episodes are available on our website. We will, of course, have links to some of the research on this story. I will let everybody know that if you're going to do additional research, make sure you've got a browser that translates, because a lot of this is in Spanish. But you can, I will try and put some of the English versions on our website. Website is thinkingsidewayspodcast.com. By the way, for folks who have not yet noticed, we don't have comments on the website anymore. That's unfortunately because it was being abused. We had to shut that down.
Which is a shame because we had many really thoughtful, intelligent commenters out there.
Good conversations, but
as
I've said before and I'll say again, it was ruined by a few for the many.
Yep, too bad.
We are always available for streaming or downloads on iTunes. So if you are a user of iTunes, go ahead and subscribe to the show there. You can also go ahead and leave us a comment and a rating. If you do so, please leave us a good one. If you've got a concern, get a hold of us, because we can't address those concerns when you're doing it on iTunes. We're on a bajillion streaming services, so whichever one you use, we're probably on it. And if you found us, that's awesome. I don't know how they work, if you can comment or rate or anything like that. They're all different.
They're all different.
We are on the social media. So we is on the Facebook.
The
Facebook page and the Facebook group. We have both of those. So like and join. Come in on the discussions. Great time.
And if you wanted to comment on our website, but you can't now, you can still comment on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. You can. Yeah. You can also comment very briefly on Twitter.
Yeah.
We have the Twitter account, which is Thinking Sideways without the G in the middle. Or we also have the subreddit, which does have conversations starting based on each episode.
Yeah. And other stuff.
So those are totally available to you. If you want to talk to us directly, go ahead and send us an email. Email address is thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. We always respond to everybody, sometimes not as quickly as we like, but we always respond to everybody. So that is an option. For support of the show, we have a couple of different ways. On the website, there is buttons on the right-hand side, one of which is for PayPal. If you want to do a one-time donation, or if you would like to get some merchandise. We've got merchandise available there. Shirts, phone cases, mugs. Still need to get a coffee mug, damn it.
Yeah, me too, actually.
And we also have Patreon. So patreon.com/thinkingsideways. Patreon is a recurring donation. So it's based on per episode how much you want to give. So keep that in mind. If you do want to do that, so that you sign up and don't say, I'm going to give 10 bucks because that's 10 bucks per episode. Yeah. We love that, but we want you to know ahead of time.
Yeah, you should be careful about that.
Yeah, please do.
I would feel really bad about that.
Absolutely.
You pledge $50 and then you get your bill.
$200!
What?
Oh, my God. I don't have anything else. You guys got anything else?
Let me think.
All right.
No.
Talk to you guys later.
Ciao.
Bye, brother.